And welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
Welcome to episode number 112 of Revitalize and Replant. My name is Tom Rainer. I am joined by Mark Clifton, who is here every other week. And it's always a joy to have Mark here, as well as Jonathan Howell. We have the International Harvester, we have The Voice, and in the production studio in Richmond, Virginia, is Amy Jordan. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for letting us share a lot of stuff that is really, really cutting edge on revitalization and replant, especially the information that Mark Clifton is bringing to this podcast. Incredible stuff. We're very, very grateful for him. We're going to talk about churches that, have you ever seen one of those round to its, Mark?
You know, I was going to find one, but I haven't got around to it.
Thank you. I'm here all week, all right? Tip your waitress.
So the whole thing about getting around to it, why is it that some churches wait too long to replant? Why do they get to the point where it's too late to do anything? So we'll be talking about that in episode number 112 of Revitalize and Replant. Jonathan, what are some of the reasons?
Well, we've got seven of them. Okay. And the first one is that there is money in the bank. So they don't replant because we can still pay the bills.
Well, one of my mentors, Lyle Schaller, the wonderful Methodist.
Was he really a mentor?
No, I never met him in person, but I read a lot he did. He was still alive when I was around, obviously.
I actually filled in for him at some conferences when he got sick.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen him and heard him, but I never personally got to know him. I wish I would.
The dean of church consultants.
Oh, absolutely. You know, he used to say that money in the bank is the death wheeze of a church.
Wow.
And
there are a lot of people that would like to have that wheeze in churches.
I guess. But, you know, when you talk about church plants, I spent most of my life planting new churches. Church plants didn't try to save up a lot of money. They used the money that they received to do ministry, to grow the church, to expand, to reach people. They didn't think, well, we need to have, you know, a bunch of money in a CD. And really, when a church has all that money put away, then they don't really need new people in order to grow. They don't really need to trust the Holy Spirit. They got the bank down the street.
Yeah.
And so that money in the bank is a huge hindrance to revitalization. The majority of church, now this is changing, all right? It's changing. But right now, the majority of churches in our denomination who come and need
help. You're talking about Southern Baptist.
Southern Baptist.
Okay.
The majority of Southern Baptist churches that come to either their state convention or their local regional association and need help and want to be replanted or revitalized, the majority of those who actually reach out and ask for help are churches who have run out of money, who can no longer pay their bills. As long as they can pay their bills, as long as they can pay a pastor, oftentimes they don't want any outside help. And so money is not necessarily a blessing to a church. Hmm. Many times you're better off if you only trust what Jesus will have you do. You can't trust what the bank has. You've got to trust him and him alone. And that's not a bad place to be. And so,
Mark Schaller wrote nearly 100 books. He may have hit 100. I'm not sure. His books were small, but then you'd open them up and the print would be small. So
that's true.
It'd be a lot of words. He wrote one book on how to be a consultant.
Really?
And it's called The Interventionist.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the only, he was always the consultant.
Yeah.
But he wrote one book on how to be a consultant.
I remember that book, actually. Yeah. I think
kind
I have that.
Kind of a purplish cover. I recommend it to our students at Church Consultation University. Now, I recommend it. I tell them it's a book they need to read at Church Consultation University. So I have been a Schaller fan before being a Schaller fan was cool.
Yeah.
And I've read probably all of his books. He was a great influence upon me as well. And like Mrs. Clifton, he started off as a city planner.
Oh, that's right. My wife's a city planner, and Lyle Schaller's a city planner.
Was a city planner.
Your wife is the next Lyle Schaller. No.
No, not exactly.
No, not quite.
Yeah. But listen, seriously, having money put away that you can pay the bills and you don't need any outside help is not a good thing necessarily.
Right.
It's a hindrance.
All right, number two, the magic bullet pastor is out there somewhere. That's been a theme that's kept popping up in our recent recordings.
I'm dealing with the church right now. More so, I'm dealing with Sam, who's dealing with the church. And they just keep saying, we've got to get a young pastor. Yeah. We've got to find that young pastor.
Probably 8 or 9 years old would be good. Go really young. I mean, yes. Don't just go young.
Just
go,
think of all the time he could spend there.
Go really young.
Long tenure. I mean, 10 years and he's just 18 years. That's right. Still a teenager.
That's right.
How many times you hear that?
Oh, today? Yeah, several. We just need a young pastor. As we've said in a previous podcast, get a young pastor, then we can offload reaching young people to him while he takes care of us and make sure he knows we pay all the bills and doesn't change anything that we don't like. Part of the problem with we have one of the characteristics of a dying church is an over-reliance on programs or personalities that result in an under-reliance on the power of the Holy Spirit.
And we're going to look at that in just a moment, too, right. Under the methods.
Right. And so if you're relying too much on the personality of the pastor, then you're not relying on the power of the Holy Spirit, and you're not really even asking to change your heart and your agenda. You're just giving this responsibility to someone that you're paying to do this. And you cannot do that. This pastor who's coming, he didn't create the mess that you're asking him to fix. And on his own, he's not going to be able to fix it. It's only going to be fixed when you submit to the Lordship of Jesus and you do what he wants you to do in his church under the leadership of that pastor. Mm. But just by his preaching and his charisma and his arrival, he's not going to turn that church around.
That's so good. So good.
All right, number three, our methods are sound.
You mentioned the programs and methods.
Yeah, we're doing the right things. People just aren't coming.
Yeah, and you know, we used to do them and they would come and we're working all the programs and we're working them hard and we keep doing what we should be doing. And again, looking at the programs and the personality, the pastor and the programs, as somehow or another, if we just keep doing those things, things will turn around. We'll get different results. And it's just not happening.
Does this lead to resentment of the community? Like, they resent the community. Well, we're doing the same things we've been doing forever.
Well, yeah.
They're not coming anymore.
The community doesn't respond as it used to. And so we talk about that's a real red flag. When you resent the community that God has brought around you because they don't respond as... You know, here's the deal. I could take you to so many churches that in the 1960s and 70s, they would do the programs. They would have Sunday school and worship and children's youth and children's program and all that stuff. And people would come. And they would have visitors every Sunday and people would join. Doesn't happen anymore. They don't have visitors. They don't join. They don't come back a second time. They're running the same programs, and they don't know what they're doing wrong. And that tends to lead to a bit of shame, because we're still doing these things, but we're not getting the results we once did. Rather than say, well, the things you're doing are not helpful right now. Mm-hmm. It's not what the community needs. It's not. You're going to have to find some different avenues to reach people than the programs that you're currently using. And people don't want to make changes. They don't want to do those. It's too risky. They just keep doing what they're doing. Going constantly, Dr. Rainer, and you see all these things the church is doing, and no one is being converted. No disciples are being made. No impact is on the neighborhood. And you just even barely suggest, why don't we not do this any longer? And they just, their head goes on fire because we can't stop doing this. That's a lack of faith, a lack of faithfulness. We've got to keep doing what we've always been doing.
And busyness is a sign of godliness.
Absolutely. And they confuse the two.
Yeah, they do confuse the two again and again.
All right, number four, we are not the problem.
We've addressed that on a number of different ways.
That's the denial.
Yeah, denial, deflection as much as denial. Jonathan, you mentioned this. I mean, think of where the problem resides in the minds of some of these churches that wait too long to replant. We just mentioned one, the community.
Right.
The community is the problem. Those people will not come. Another one is just generally the culture. The culture is the problem. Things just aren't the way that they used to be. Sometimes it's the denomination.
Mm-hmm.
You work for a denominational entity, don't you?
I do, yes.
Yeah, I remember. I used to, way back when.
Used to, a long time ago. You had a cup of coffee at one, didn't you?
Yes.
I think you stopped by there one day.
Yes. y'all are terrible. Does anyone ever tell you?
Absolutely.
If only North American Mission Board would do the following, if only our denomination would do the following.
Right. If they would just give us some people and some money. But we ask, and they didn't give us people, and they didn't give us money. So what are we going to do?
Exactly.
Or this neighborhood, you don't understand. These people don't like us. They don't believe the way we do. They resent us for being here. We're never going to be able to reach them, that kind of thing. Or we can't compete with the big mega church down the street or the fancy new church plant.
Okay, so the problem is them. It's the
problem
other church.
Is them. Yeah. Yep. It's not our problem.
About once, maybe twice a month, maybe as frequently as once a month, I get a request for some type of grant. Money.
Mm-hmm.
And the statement is, if only we could get this, we would be fine. If only we could get this check, if we could only get this program.
Yep.
So the problem always resides somewhere else. I mean, can you imagine the early church saying, if only we had this, we'd be okay? They did okay with just the Holy Spirit most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so the deflection problem is paramount. And if you're deflecting you're not going to get to the point where you're willing to make change, and that change could be replanting.
And sometimes they'll tell you, we've tried to reach our neighborhood. Oh, no, you don't understand. We've tried, and they don't respond to us. And so you ask them what they try, and they put their toe in the water over here. Or they do a little bit here, and no one responds. And it just proves our point that they're just this neighborhood. You don't understand this neighborhood. It's really resistant. And you just have to help them understand that the neighborhood's there because Jesus brought the neighborhood there. And they're going to have to love that neighborhood even though they are resistant. And they're going to love that neighborhood even though the neighborhood doesn't love them. Mm-hmm. I used to always say, when my dad was pastoring in the 50s, it was like KU, University of Kansas, playing every game at Allen Fieldhouse on the campus.
Yeah.
They still had to play the game, but, I mean, everybody was cheering for him. And then when I come along in the 70s, it's like KU playing at a neutral site. But today, it's like KU playing every game at Duke. I mean, no, the neighborhood's not cheering for us. We're not popular with them. But
is this a basketball?
That was
analogy?
A fantastic analogy.
You know, and so we're not used to people booing us, and so we just don't want to play anymore. No, first of all, we know we're going to win the game, so let's go ahead and play it.
Oh, there right? you go. There so
the,
you go.
We've seen the end of the game. We win. Let's go ahead and play it, and let's try to win these fans over. And I think sometimes we don't want to do that.
I think you just said Kansas would beat Duke.
I think I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably okay. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, they are the Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
well done.
I did the NCAA bracket several months ago. I picked Virginia to beat Texas Tech in the finals.
Yeah, you did. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. All right, number five, we can get it done tomorrow. Just delay, delay, delay.
Yeah, procrastination because there's no sense of urgency. Procrastination because you think that there's a magic bullet out there. Procrastination because it's someone else's fault. All of these tie together.
But shouldn't, if anyone should be urgent, Matthew 24 tells us it should be us as Christians. The urgency is there.
Oh, but we don't want to be too quick to act here. We got to make sure we take care. You know, we've heard of churches that have gone off the rails, and we got to be very cautious. And so they'll meet and talk about it, and meeting and talking about it is almost like doing it. And so we'll just keep putting off the final decision. We'll keep talking about it, visiting about it, thinking about it, but we won't make the decision. And, man, I was working with the church not long ago that had this mess of a house next door that they used to distribute clothing and food, and the place was about to fall in. And it was
Airbnb?
Just, it needed to be shut down, and it needed to be – but every time when they bring it up, they would talk it to death, and then they would decide, well, let's just set it aside. We'll talk about it again next month.
Table that motion.
We'll just keep – it is so typical of churches that are in that kind of pattern that they cannot make a decision.
Yep. Yep. Sometimes I look at our governmental structures and look at all the things that we put off, and we continue to have the mess that we do today. And yep, many churches are like that, and that they put it off until it's too late to do anything. And again, we're talking about churches that waited too long. Really, they shut the door before they even have an opportunity to replant.
And again, we've talked about it, but it bears speaking to again. Your aged parents, and you see them declining, and you're worried about them being home alone. What happens if my dad falls? Can my mom pick him up? What happens if they forget to leave something on the stove? And so you begin to have conversations with them about, you know, maybe mom and dad, we need to talk about you moving in with us. Or maybe mom and dad, we need to talk about somebody coming in here to live with you. And invariably, a lot of times what mom and dad says is what? Well, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I think that's probably going to happen. But that's not right now. That's down the road a ways. We're not that bad yet. There's a very similar thing in the churches, just like that.
I have an 82-year-old mother-in-law.
Okay.
And I'm not the least bit worried about her hearing this podcast.
Okay.
She doesn't subscribe and listen to every
episode. She doesn't have internet.
Okay. Oh. Well, yeah, that's going to be difficult for a podcast. Yeah,
and she doesn't have cell phone coverage.
We get this printed out on some vinyls.
And she doesn't have any type of cell service. And she lives in the middle of the woods in South Alabama. And I'm really middle of the woods.
Okay.
She lives in what she calls a cabin. It's not her main house, but the cabin basically is a mobile home where they threw some cedar planks up.
Okay.
In the middle of the new Tornado Alley.
Okay.
It's moved from Oklahoma down south.
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. And with some drug addiction in that rural area near her, with people looking for, there have been a lot of thefts there.
Okay.
82-year-old woman,
yep,
living by herself.
Right.
Don't you want to at least go back to your home that's where there's a population of eight instead of this one where there's only a population of animals?
Right.
But she won't. I'll do it later.
We'll talk about that later.
She's 82.
Yeah.
You know, how do you look your mother-in-law in the face and say, ain't many laters left.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to look at the church in the face and say, there are not many laters left.
Yep. Yep. That's what's going on here. We'll get it done tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, number six, we still have visitors.
Or, and this is even in some ways worse, I'll sit down with the church and I'll show them all the numbers. We'll look at it. They go, well, you know, we had a family join last year. We've had a
last
new family.
Year.
No, or a few months ago even. We've had one, and they'll get one new family, and that will tell them that, no, we can.
Oh, it's turned around.
It's turned around. We got a new family. Well, we've had some people visit recently.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. And it's not a trend. I mean, we talked in an earlier podcast about what's your matrix and what are you looking at? Metrics, rather.
Yeah.
What are you looking at?
And it's
the
matrix.
The matrix. And it's not a trend. One family visiting, one family joining is not a trend. But a lot of times they'll take that little bit of
anecdotal. People always give way too much credibility for that.
And every time that happens, my heart just gets crushed. We'll put all this up information. They'll see clearly that they're not seeing conversion growth. They're not seeing anybody. They're not impacting the neighborhood. They're not on a pattern of making disciples. But then somebody will say, well, we had that family with two children join last year, so I think we turned a corner. I think we're ready on our way, that kind of thing. Or we've had a visitor once in a while. Maybe we'll get some more. But just because people visit and they don't come back the second time, that's a terribly dangerous sign.
Yep. Okay, we're looking at why some churches wait too long to replant. Reason number seven.
Yeah, the final reason is that we know another church like us that turned around. So they kind of play the comparison game. Well, it happened there. It can happen here.
Yeah, and they think they're just around the corner from the right thing. They're looking for another silver bullet, as we've said before, the right pastor, the right, and they think it's just going to happen. And again, all of that goes back to denial. It goes back to a lack of desire to really make the changes that need to be made. It goes back to a lack of desire to follow Jesus and his plan. It goes back to the church being what they want it to be. And they say, you know, you'll give them all the information out there about what the church needs to do and what they need to do in order to accomplish that. And they'll look at you and they'll say, no, we think it's going to turn around. We just feel it. We sense it. We know that church down the street, they were able to turn it around. And yet they won't go down and visit that church and find out everything that they went through to make that happen.
They're making assumptions that church has very much just what they have
instead of
making the necessary changes.
Yeah. That's right. And so it's a very, very difficult thing for them to get to see reality. I mean, really. And frankly, if you're a consultant or you're a pastor or you're helping these churches, you're just going to have to pray diligently that the Lord will open their eyes and remove the scales from their eyes and unclog their ears so they can hear and see the truth. Because they're not hearing and seeing the truth. Satan has really blinded them and he's really deafed them and they're not hearing it. They're not seeing it. They're not experiencing it. And I do believe it's spiritual warfare. I truly do. And it's not all just, you know, numbers and strategies and listening to podcasts. You're dealing with people that Satan desires to rob God of his glory by seeing this church die. And right now he's held some of these people captive and he's got them to believe things that aren't true. And if they're truly regenerate, then the idea is to help them see Jesus and what he wants for his church and follow his plan. And if they'll do that, I remember Henry Blackaby one time said, if that church dies, do you think they follow Jesus right into the grave? I mean, I think if they'll follow Jesus, they're not going to die. I really do believe that.
Wow.
And it's a very challenging kind of thing to help them quit following their own agenda and their own heart and running based on their own fears and turn only to Christ and say, whatever you would have us do in this church, we'll be willing to do.
Wow.
And that really shows, though, we talk a lot about methods, we talk a lot about strategies, different things like that. But for a church to be replanted successfully, it takes heart change and spiritual renewal in the church.
Absolutely. It's not going to happen without that. Now, you still need to change the governance, maybe change the structure, work on the actual building and facility. There's a lot of things that have to be done, but it begins with a realization. I don't care if I've been here 40 years. It doesn't matter what I've done in this church in 40 years. All that matters is what Jesus has done for me in the last 40 seconds. This is his church. I didn't buy it with my blood. You know, this is his bride. He's coming back for it. And we owe it to him to do what he wants us to do with his church. So oftentimes, I'll sit down with the church and I'll say, look, Jesus has a plan for your church. I don't know what it is, and it looks like you don't know what it is either. Well, seriously, or you wouldn't be calling me.
Have you used that?
Yeah, I say, or you wouldn't be calling me.
Oh,
but
wow.
I do know this. I do know this. If we will listen to him and lay everything else down and come to him with completely open arms, and it's all on the table, he will reveal to us what he wants us to do with his church. And friend, he's under no obligation, nor will he likely resource your plans for his church, but he'll spare nothing from heaven to resource his plans for his church. So get your heart made right, and if you got to spend 40 days in prayer, whatever it is you got to do to get your people to really be broken before the Lord and lay down everything except Christ and follow him, it's likely the church will be completely different than anything they ever could expect, but it'll be what Jesus wants it to be.
And Mark and Jonathan, we are right in the middle of. Mark's a part of it. I'm a part of it. Sam Rainer's a part of it. We are right in the middle of a cohort group going through revitalization. And right after my introductory session of cohort, we were followed by Chuck Lawless, who talked to the group about spiritual warfare issues in revitalization and replanting. So much of this is exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, it really is, guys. And if you're out there and you're in a revitalization, don't do it alone. Find people around you, get other pastors, other leaders, and be with them and share with them. And don't do this in isolation. It's tremendous spiritual warfare. Armor up with the full armor of God every day and trust him and his goodness. It's hard work, but it's worth it.
And as always, thank you, North American Mission Board. Thank you, President Kevin Ezell. Thank you, Mark Clifton, for all that you do to make this podcast a reality. Episode number 112, we're 2 years into this. We're beginning year three. And thank you, audience, for the growth and the receptivity we have had to this podcast.
Revitalize and Replant, as always, is sponsored by the North American Mission Board and ChurchReplanters.com. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committed to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches and simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new ones. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit ChurchReplanters.com.
For those of you who listen to us every week, you think that this is really a weekly show, and it is, but we record these in batch, and we've had Mark with us for the last 2 days. Jonathan and I just figured out we did a total of 18 podcasts between the two of us, and Mark was a part of most of those. So, Mark, get your Uber, make the 12-hour drive back to—
I tell you what, my Uber driver's out front. We're going to go 12 hours back to Kansas together, and— We're not going to stop. We're going to go straight through.
Half a tank of gas. And
you're a better man than I am. So thank you, Mark. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Amy J. in Richmond, for being with us. And as always, thank you for being with us at Revitalize and Replant, where we are revitalizing and replanting churches to greater health together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.